Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
It's the Egg Chasers. Hello, Egg Chasers. Oh, my God. Right, I'm just letting you in on this. We had a... This is take two.
Right,
because
JB
stopped recording. Yeah, just keep it rolling. We'll do it live.
I've stopped recording, though.
Oh.
Have you?
Yeah, I have. Sorry. No, I haven't.
No, you haven't. Keep it rolling. Keep it rolling. Let's go. Go again. Hit it again.
What, do you want the music again?
Yeah, go.
All right,
go. Come on.
Okay.
That never happened.
All right. This doesn't happen on Flats and Shanks, mate. Oh, God. Right, ready.
Here we go.
3, 2, 1.
Yes. Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And as you can tell already, within the first moments of the podcast, our brains are fried from watching, absorbing, living and loving the rugby all over the weekend. Autumn International Weekend 1 done, and we're going to break it down for you over the next however long. I'm Tim, JB is right there.
Hello, Tim.
In a lovely old jersey, Bayonne Bombers from New Jersey.
That's right. I've got my my Bayonne top on. I love it.
Phil, hello.
Hello.
In
hello,
a Rugby World Cup 2015 France jersey.
France, yes. In honour of my... He might be my new favourite player.
Although big statement.
I've only seen him play once, but he was magnificent.
Go on.
Young scrum half, Dupont.
Antoine Dupont,
formerly cast, currently Toulouse player, who was electric for France against New Zealand.
Yes, he really was.
I got very annoyed about this on the weekend because, of course, it was on Premier Sport, which nobody subscribes to. No one does. And I couldn't watch it. First time I've missed a France-New Zealand game in years.
It was on Sky Go, apparently, as well.
Was it?
Apparently. Although I may have that completely wrong, but that's what I picked up from a few tweets.
Well, I rewatched the whole, I watched the whole thing on YouTube this morning.
No.
So
well,
it's just the whole game was available on YouTube.
Right. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about England's win against Argentina, Ireland's demolition of South Africa, Wales' standard 13th straight defeat to Australia, and Scotland in a high-scoring match against Samoa. And then there's Italy, Fiji. There's France, New Zealand, like we mentioned. And there's all sorts of other stuff been going on. And we have an incredible game that one of our listeners has got in touch with. Should we tell them what... Let's say what it's called.
No, leave it. Save it for later.
All right.
That's part of the impact, I think.
Do not miss it. It's going to be special.
Can I lead off with something?
Yeah, go on, Jay.
Very quickly. Now,
before we do, I just want to set the rules and the parameters for this podcast.
Oh,
all right?
God, here we go.
This was Phil's idea. He thought we should be, like, positive or negative. And bearing in mind this is Phil saying this, like, no sitting on the fence here. Let's try and be Negatron or totally uber
Positron.
Positron. Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, I don't know if it's positive or negative, but who saw the Rugby League World Cup this weekend?
I've seen the highlights of the game of the weekend, which was Tonga, New Zealand.
Did you see?
I don't care about the highlights of the game.
Yeah.
It was the highlights of the pre-game.
Oh, I mean, I've been on record as not being a massive Haka fan.
You could say that.
This one was magnificent. It was brilliant. And
so if you didn't see it, go and watch the video. and I think we even tweeted it at Rugby Podcast. You can find us there. And it is just, there was none of this observing the rules about keeping 20 metres away and standing and doing nothing. It was game. It was face to face. Like Cockerell and what was his face back in the day?
It was awesome.
Richard Cockerell and Norm.
Yeah, you are right.
The hooker for...
I know exactly, Norm.
The hooker for New Zealand when they played at Old Trafford.
Yeah, you're absolutely...
Years ago. Norm Hewitt?
Yes, Norm MacDonald is a newsreader.
Norm Hewitt and Richard Cockerell face to face. But it was like the whole team were like that.
Yeah.
So I tried to rekindle my love with the hacker. I mean, that kind of did it. It was brilliant. And I watched a few videos. And the thing which struck me is how different the hacker is now from when it was originally. Now,
oh my God.
Have I sent you this video clip, Tim?
Is it the one that gets trotted out sometimes? From the 70s, yes, I've seen this one where it's like
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's like a little Macarena dance.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, I've got it playing here. It literally looks like 15 awkward dads in a christening disco. It's horrendous.
Now, it's funny, we were talking over the summer in the Lions tour about how it was just, there were so many hackers.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, when I was watching New Zealand France, I have had too much hacker in my life. Mm. Mm. It didn't have the same impact that it normally does.
It did for the Lions test. It didn't for getting off the plane. Yeah. But the amazing thing, like the responses are so ridiculous. I mean, I was watching one with France and they went into a flying V and then held hands and then marched up together and then got battered. I mean, you do think, did you really need to spend time doing the flying V when your lineouts were so bad?
the one where they took off their shirts and they were in the tricolour flag. That was cool. I liked that.
No, it isn't cool. It's just so much thought has gone into it. And I don't like it. Grown men holding hands. Grown Gallic giants. No.
Well, let me ask with the first question then. With England, positives. Let's start with, let's be positrons about this.
Well, there's only one place to start, isn't there?
Is there?
I'd say Sam Underhill. Absolutely outstanding performance. Second cap. You know, everything that has been put in his way so far, he's overcome with quite some gusto. And yeah, brilliant, brilliant performance.
I would extend that out to the whole of the England back row. Nathan Hughes was very, very good.
He was very good.
Took his try well, did a lot of carrying. Because... the back row is not a great carrying back row.
No.
Robshaw and Underhill. I mean, Underhill, do you know how many carries he made?
I know. It was 0 yards, wasn't it?
Two carries for 0 yards.
But it's Haskell stats, isn't it?
It is Haskell stats, but his defence was superb. His work rate was superb.
It is weird, this, because it is incredibly Haskell-esque.
Yeah.
Incredibly so. I mean, when Haskell was at his absolute peak in Australia, this is basically what he did. And maybe this is exactly what Eddie wants.
Yeah.
I think it is.
I think you're right.
Because he stood, Nathan Hughes found himself, was stood in the 15-metre channel quite a lot, clearly, deliberately so. Sam Underhill was right in and amongst it, in between the 15s, doing all his work, mainly destructive defence. And it was really, I thought it seemed quite magnanimous in a way of Haskell to be, doing the analysis of the man who's taken his spot.
Yeah.
And he seemed to do it with a lot of good grace, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And I imagine, yeah, it is a tricky one, but I guess you've got to be that way because eventually you are going to get old and eventually someone is going to be young and like you and, you know, take over.
Yeah.
The worry for me is Sam Underhill's shape. He's extremely muscular, but he's actually quite a small frame.
He's not that big.
No.
And I'm with you on this. So the force that he tackles with, I mean, some of the hits he put in were brilliant. They were perfectly executed, technique perfect. But he's not an enormous bloke and he's already had quite a few injuries.
Yeah.
I wonder how much longer he can continue to put in 20 plus tackles of that ferocity.
Courtney
Laws,
it was a few years ago, he said, I've changed my game a little bit.
He did.
Not flying in the same way that he did.
Yeah, I'm sure Wilkinson went through the same process. They tried to do some weird tackling technique where he kind of swings himself around the player. I can't actually describe it, but that's how it's described to me.
Yeah, there's a few. Jerry Collins as well.
Is that right?
He changed his technique. I also remember reading an interview where he changed his technique. He had to he actively slimmed down his biceps.
We've all done it, mate.
They were affecting his tackling technique. Too many kills for the girls.
There was one other thing I was going to say. Yes. I think there's a really interesting perception thing going on, though. And it kind of links back to Sam Underhill's size. He made 3 carries or whatever it was for 0 yards or 3 yards.
Two carries for 0 yards on the stats that I've got in front of me.
See, I wonder if this is a case of people sort of don't think they can do it at that size and therefore concentrate on other things. And the reason that's important is because Sam Simmons is a very similar build to Sam Underhill. And I wonder if we're going to start getting a new breed of rugby player who is slightly smaller in the back row but slightly more explosive based on him.
Possibly. Mm. I think you've got to have... That's all well and good for certain positions, but we spoke a few weeks ago about the All Blacks, particularly in their tight five, actually looking at size and weight.
And that's interesting.
If you are not a certain size and weight, you are not going to play second row, you're not going to play front row.
I actually believe that's a bit short-sighted.
I'm not sure it is for those positions. I think it is short-sighted elsewhere. But your back row carrier, someone like Nathan Hughes or Billy Vunipola, who are 120, 130 kilograms, someone like Sam Simmons can't carry the same in heavy traffic as those guys.
It's tough, isn't it? Because in the Premiership, which is where he'll be playing, he actually will be expected to perform not a similar role to Hughes, but he'll be asked to do the majority of carrying.
Yeah.
And, you know, is that possible for a guy that size?
Well, it will be interesting when Waldrum gets properly back fit for Exeter.
Yeah, what they do.
Will they play both of them, but with Simmons as a 7? And then he can potentially do it all in the same way that someone like Hooper is not big, but he's very athletic.
That's probably a pretty good comparison, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe not as barrel-chested, but not far off in size.
Hooper is quick as well.
It was good to see him make his debut, but there's bigger things to talk about than Sam Simmons. So
you're quite right.
In 60 minutes or whatever it was,
Tom Curry.
Mako Vunipola making 20 tackles, but also being a destructive ball carrier.
Yeah.
Talk about work rate. And this would be like, that's a massive positive. It's not a negative, but it was one observation is the way that, and we do this in the media, and I'm part of the media, so I'm culpable as well. But
the elite.
Going overboard on the shiny new toy. Mako Vunipola was doing this constantly. He was making rampaging runs, massive tackles in defence. And it was just like, oh, well, Mako Vunipola with a tackle. Sam Underhill does a tackle. No, don't get me wrong. It was brilliant. And it was, incredible. Even when he just like cleaned out a ruck, it was like, it was a brilliant run by Mako, cleaned out by Sam Underhill. Fantastic clean out by Sam Underhill there.
I do get your frustration, actually.
Yeah.
It happened annoying. With Burgess, didn't it, when he played his first Premiership game?
No, it didn't. Because if it did happen and Burgess made 24 tackles, you know, that would really be something to talk about.
I'm not being negative on Underhill. He was brilliant.
Yeah, so, I would just say, actually, I think it is more remarkable just because it's his second cap. I mean, there isn't much of a story, is there? Mako, still world class. We know, he is a world-class prop.
All right, then. Well, let's jump to another relative newbie. I know he's been playing for a while now, but he got the 12th shirt. And again, from the way that the commentary was done, I don't think he was called on just what a poor game Henry Slade had. And I think we should be honest about that. It was, unfortunately, and we don't want it to be the case, that was a big negative.
I'm with you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I can't say it now.
Unanimous.
Yes, thank you.
It's a real shame.
Yeah, I think Henry Slade was set up to fail. Because if he has a good game, it doesn't matter because Owen Farrell's coming back in. And if he doesn't do well, he's in the situation that he is now. And his next England appearance is going to have to be for injury. I think that's the only way he's going to get a real sustained crack at this.
So I was thinking, I rewatched the game today, and I was thinking about this. I hope it's not. So,
agreed.
That wasn't a good performance. Not by Henry Slade's standards, not by anyone's standards, in fact. The miss pass into touch when Nathan Hughes had a 20...
12-3-esque.
It was the first thing that went through my mind, and I hate to say that because
Slade. It's probably the first thing that went through Slade's mind as soon as the ball left his hands.
I've done a Billy 12.
No!
The Slade train is stuck in the station, has been delayed.
But I really hope... So We know how good Farrell is. I think we'll see a marked improvement in England when Farrell comes back into that position.
Yeah, he's not being rested next week, is he?
I actually hope they go back to trying someone new for the Samoa game for the third Autumn International. I'd probably want it to be Slade, but maybe push Slade to 13 and put Lazowski, who came on off the bench and did very well,
at
12.
Lazowski's going to have another crack, isn't he? It's only fair.
Yeah.
He loves the physical stuff as well, doesn't he? Him and Farrell are just like clones of each other. They love to put the shoulder in.
I guess they're just competing with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you know who Slade reminded me of this weekend? Right, so I'll give you a clue. A guy playing out of position at 12 and not having a particularly good appearance.
Sam Burgess?
No. Far more pertinent to what Slade does. And also his England career never really going where it should have gone. Does anyone know the 10 that started at 12?
Wilkinson started
this
at
weekend?
12?
No, back in the day.
Ollie Barkley started at 12. Shane Geraghty?
Nope.
Isn't Shane...
I'll tell you the one. The bright young thing in English rugby that was moved to 12 for his first game was...
Toby Flood?
Charlie Hodgson against France.
Charlie Hodgson played 12.
Yeah, and ooh. I can't remember if it was his first cap or his second cap, but it was fairly early on in his career. They put him at 12, and it didn't go so well. And I kind of feel that hampered his England career then for the rest of his.
No, but this is different because everyone's been saying we think Slade's probably more a 12 than a 10 or a 13.
Mm.
I thought that's what a lot of people have been saying.
Well, a lot of people have, yeah, and me included.
Mm.
But I'm only basing that on really seeing him at 13 and him playing well at 13.
Yeah, so I don't.
So that's probably unfair.
I'm one of those who said it. But I guess my point is, he'll be remembered for his positional play at 12. Hence, it will affect him being a 13 or a 10 in the future.
Yeah, hopefully this won't have any lasting memory because it will be in the distant past and he'll have another performance. But who would have thought when we talked a couple of weeks ago and you said, who do you think is going to be the Tamana Harrison of this year's squad?
Yeah.
We didn't think it could potentially be Henry Slade.
Tell you what, if someone gave me Owen Farrell's jersey to look after for one game, I'd give it to Piers Francis. I wouldn't want it.
Yeah. It's a poison chalice, that, isn't it?
Thanks, coach.
Just one thing, Maka Vunipola, just jumping back to him briefly, he's still relatively young. His cauliflower ears are incredible right now. He's got the cauliflower ears of a like 45-year-old retired veteran international with 120 caps to his name.
Yeah, he's done a lot of scrimmaging.
He has done a lot of scrimmaging. Just on the overall, so we've spoke about the players. The overall performance from England was really not good, and I say this for a couple of reasons. So, particularly in that second half, they couldn't string phases together. They couldn't get territory. They were stuck in their own half. And Argentina did very well to contain them. Their set piece, both scrum and line-out, was very good. But the other side of that is England seemed a bit devoid of ideas, a bit devoid of exactly how to exit properly, how to get out and get playing on that front foot ball. And also... Argentina, if they'd have had... Now, they've got a world-class kicker. They've got two world-class kickers. If they'd played like world-class kickers, they would have won.
Mm.
They left 14 points and 14 kickable points out on the pitch.
Madness out of Test rugby.
They had 17% conversion rate across three kickers.
I completely,
that's criminal.
It is. So territorially, what you said is absolutely spot on. And... again, not wanting to just blow smoke up New Zealand's backside because Argentina stuck with New Zealand for 60 minutes quite recently. But
they did.
That Argentina team that played on Saturday would have been ripped to shreds by New Zealand.
Styles, though, mate. You know.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
Styles make fights.
I agree.
Agree with that. But yeah, you're right. I think you're right.
England always start the autumn slowly. This weekend against Australia, I think it'll be very different.
Well, I've got bad news for you, mate.
The negative, just on Phil's thing about the negative becoming a positive, the bad performance meant we got to see Eddie Jones completely lose it on a close-up camera, which is one of my favourite moments of the season.
I'm glad
smashing his notepad and pencil down, and then I think he just said,
how stupid are we?
something like that, yeah.
So
that was when it was England early on in the second half.
Yeah.
They get within 5 metres, they lose the ball, they get the line out, and then they lose it again, and Argentina hack it downfield. Ugh.
So I have got a bit of a prediction now, and I'm going to be widely mocked for this. But I think this might be the beginning of a very difficult time for England. So I don't think they're going to win next week. And not only do I think they're not going to win, I think Eddie Jones gets too riled up about it. And the one criticism about Eddie Jones across most of the places that he's been is how intense he is. And the first people that feel this, well, by looking at his past at least, have always been his backroom staff. Now, I'm not sure you're aware of this, but the England backroom staff have been changed substantially since Eddie Jones has come in. He works everyone very hard, and I wonder if they have a dip in form, whether that intensity which he's already shown to the backroom staff will then translate to the playing staff.
Well, I disagree about a hard time coming up, because you look at the fixtures and England have a relatively speaking, an easy time of it this autumn, and then they've got Ireland and Wales at home in the Six Nations. So I expect them to go unbeaten until they play New Zealand.
Well, let's see. If they beat Australia, I'll agree with you, but I think they're going to lose to Australia, and I think this is going to be the start of a pretty turgid time then.
Interesting. So we will go on to our proper predictions, probably in a midweek pod.
Yes. So just goods, bads. Hartley, I thought was really good. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, and I read an article, I think it was in the Times, saying Hartley is holding, like, Eddie Jones is his willingness to stick with Hartley is going to be a limiting factor for England. I think it could have been a while ago. I actually think Hartley's playing the best rugby he's played for a few years.
Yeah.
I think Jamie George is brilliant, and he should be playing more, but England don't have that captain.
You do think, how do the boys win their shirts? And it's from their week in, week out club form. Hartley has been playing well, but when he's come up against Jamie George, quite frankly, he's had it handed to him.
He
twice.
Has. You're right.
Come on. But,
right.
But you switch Jamie George and Dylan Hartley round in those teams, it doesn't change the result.
Yeah, you.
No, it doesn't. But who's got the more impressive body of work? Who was on the Lions tour, so on and so forth?
This is you know. There we go. All we can say is what we've seen in an England shirt on the most recent example, where some players were quiet and England couldn't seem to be able to do some very basic things. Dylan Hartley, I thought, was really, really good.
Well,
just one bad though. Let the boys play. That bloody I mean, the coaching point for whacking Tuchelet or anyone else going up for a high catch is don't even bother. Even when you do have a realistic chance to compete and you can actually get your hand on the ball, still don't bother because you're going to get yellow carded.
Yeah, this is I find this very interesting. And I can see why you're frustrated, because this is a different interpretation of the law. So we've seen previously, it's the law says you've got to be in a position to compete for the ball. Now, previously that has been, if a man's on the ground, his feet are on the ground, he's not in a position to compete. If he's in the air, he's in a position to compete for the ball. Mm. Here, Tuchel actually got into the air. The difference is, relatively, because Mike Brown got further into the air, Tuchel, this is the ref's interpretation.
Yeah.
Mike Brown was relatively higher, so Tuchel, even though he's off the ground, wasn't in a position to compete. Now, so that,
irrespective of the fact Tuchel at one point had his hand on the ball.
Yeah. Amazing. So that's, it's inconsistent. I'm with you on this one, Tim. I think that should have been maybe a penalty, but
play
probably
on.
Not. Just play on. It's an unfortunate rugby incident, and I feel terrible for Mike Brown. But that could have happened in a perfectly legal tackle at any time in the game. What I do find even more confusing, so it's inconsistent application of the law. What I find more confusing is, if you say it is a foul and Mike Brown lands on his head, neck area, because that's exactly where he landed, then it's a red card, not a yellow card.
He's gone.
So it's like a double inconsistent application of the law, which...
It was his first international game, that referee. I thought he will get better. And you can tell Nigel Owens was almost coaching him through the match. He's talking to him a lot.
He did, yeah. But Nigel Owen does that with...
Make a gag, throw a one-liner in.
He does that with Wayne Barr. He does it with all of the referees. He just likes to get his face on camera.
His gags in,
yeah.
So before we depart, England, Argentina, which we can touch on it again, but anything else to throw into the pot other than we couldn't pass and they couldn't kick?
No, not really.
No, I think we're mostly done there.
Yeah. Well, on the strength of what we said last week, or in our midweek podcast, when we were saying what England need to do is win all the games, yes, but actually start to show a level of dominance.
Yes.
And on that criteria, they didn't pass that.
Nope.
That'll be a minor fault.
Yeah. Oh, Eddie Jones will be, as you saw, he will be furious with that performance.
Yeah. Don't forget, coming up, we've got an amazing game. I'm not going to tell you about yet. But let me briefly mention Cornerstone, one of the people that helped make this podcast possible. And the only reason I mention it is because we have an amazing offer for you, because Cornerstone really like us. Simple. So we're passing on a fantastic offer for you for the mail order razor company, Cornerstone. In fact, they had a TV advert during the England game.
That's how good they are.
They've gone big time now. Although when we started with them a few years ago, we were there like their first people that they worked with. And we brought them to the world of rugby, and now they're on doing TV adverts. But we got a very special offer for you. So Cornerstone, mail order razor company, the best. There's loads of companies that are trying to copy them now. Not as good,
no.
In our opinion, and you will agree if you try it out, for just £4 for your aluminium, weighty, heavy, metal, free shaft that you can get engraved with your initials, your 6 razors in a presentation box delivered to you, £4. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
egg 10 at checkouts. Where do you want to go next, Tim? What do you want to do?
I want to do Ireland.
You don't want to do the LV Cup? Sorry, the Anglo Welsh yet? No.
No, not yet.
No,
not yet.
No.
Not yet.
Let's talk about Ireland, because this was.
Oh.
A hell of a performance.
It was the most important game of the weekend for one reason. The JB Cup has been retained by Ireland. Congratulations, boys. It takes a lot of hard work and grit to retain this cup.
Do you know what? It's peak JB to name a competition after yourself.
I suggested the name. It's a happy coincidence that a listener actually built the account. But yeah, five on the bounce for Ireland. They have the longest winning streak of any Tier 1 nation. Don't know who's second, but it doesn't matter because Ireland retained the JB Cup. So... you guys in green, well done. Pour yourself a Guinness.
Well, no, they're not in green, though. That was part of the problem. It would have been a better spectacle to watch even had they been wearing their emerald green. That would have been more of a contrast with the South African dark green, bottle green, than actually what happened, which was the muddy grey, black and green kit. What were Ireland thinking?
Well, do you know what? The actual green grey isn't too bad. I don't think it's a bad colour for Ireland to wear.
I didn't like the kit overall. I thought it was a horrible kit.
I don't mind the kit.
I quite like it, actually.
But it feels like a training kit.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like...
Well, it does kind of look like Ireland are playing in a dystopian future, doesn't it? It's like the radioactive green on the drab, olive.
The multi and infrequent sort of randomly positioned stripes on the socks. They look like kind of sort of you could be wearing them under your suit. You know what I mean? The sort of corporate socks.
Modelled on the sound of a Geiger counter. I don't like that bit, but I do like the colour palette that they've used. It's quite nice. It's just occasionally they do this, don't they? Where the sponsors need, or the kit maker needs to get the second kit out. No matter what happens, and it's always in the autumn, and we've had some horrific ones in the past. We've had England in purple.
Yeah,
we've had terrible ones.
I didn't like England's kit either. So I've got to say, we love Canterbury, and but I didn't rate what they did at the weekend.
Agreed. Yeah, no, neither of these away. Well, no, the Ireland kit has a basis of a nice kit. But it's not a nice kit.
It's too busy.
Well, hang on. Here's a question for you. What should these teams be playing in? What should England be playing in if it's not white? It should be red.
Red.
Yeah?
Red.
Yeah. Done. And Ireland?
White.
White.
There you go then. Well, why mess around with this? It's fine then.
Yeah. It is the need to have a new jersey every 12
months. Colour palettes aside, and yeah, I agree with that. That's why. Colour palettes aside, I don't like all the faded colours England shorts, and I wasn't a fan of all
that. So I'm trying to think of a team that does this well. There is a faded top somewhere, which I quite like. I think, did Argentina have one, which is quite nice? Probably is the answer.
Yes. Yeah. I think they may have. I'm sure there's a faded change jersey.
But I'm not a fan of the fade. On a training jersey, fine. Mm-hmm. A playing jersey,
correct.
Not so much.
Yeah, it's such an important bit of kit, isn't it? It's such
honour the tradition. You should be able to. It's almost like you should be able to watch a film from 100 years ago and the kits, whilst it will look different and the players and the shape and size and everything will look different, there should be a level of continuity.
Yeah, because there is a certain level element. Like, so many people have worked so hard to wear that kit and you've got one cap and you end up in grey and green Geiger counters.
If that's the one cap you get and that was the jersey you wore, like, just say
it's not on, really.
I'm going to touch wood when I say this. Imagine Jacob Stockdale's form dips horrifically, or he has a string of injuries and never plays for Ireland again. If that's the one jersey he's got hanging up in his in his hallway.
I just don't think they should change it drastically. Obviously, if there's a kit clash, do it. But there again, don't change it to make the kit clash. that's the weird part.
But two more positives for Ireland we could possibly mention. That was not just a performance of such dominance.
Yeah.
To contrast with what we were talking about that England needed to do, Ireland just brought it.
Ireland are scarily good, I think.
Yes. They've got a real nice balance of experience and young talent coming through.
Yeah. And it's the system, isn't it? It's just how they produce so many players. And maybe for the first time in Ireland's history, they have got so much strength in so many areas. I mean, you could get two Ireland teams out and they'd look very good.
Yeah, I agree with that. It was, so we spoke last week about, particularly in the back three, hoping that Schmidt would go for the young, talented players, again, compared to some of the more experienced players. And he did. He had a nice balance with Rob Kearney at fullback, and then Conway and Stockdale as the two wingers.
I love Conway. I think he's brilliant.
They were exceptional.
I know everyone wants to talk about Stockdale, but I really like Conway.
Oh, they were both brilliant. They were both outstanding. And the final try.
By the way, if you're listening to the podcast, you'd have been hearing about Jacob Stockdale for a couple of years now. Before he broke through into the Ulster team, I've been there telling you about him.
Ireland under-20s in the Rugby World Cup 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's some player, isn't he?
He really is.
Now, do you know everyone does that annoying thing and talks about Ringrose as the second coming of Brian O'Driscoll?
Yeah.
Is this going to be the new thing that Stockdale is the second coming of Tommy Bow?
Tommy Bow is not dead. Yeah. Tommy Bow is still very much alive and kicking.
Yep, still playing.
Stockdale is reminiscent of Tommy Bow in his prime. It's that tall, like broad-shouldered, but still athletic, almost like a swimmer's physique.
Yeah.
Long gait, good step. Powerful player.
God, I love Tommy Bow in his prime.
Oh, he's some player.
Do you think he rates, like, this is a tangent now, top five Home Nations wingers?
He's in the conversation, definitely.
Ever?
Yeah. Is that too high?
Yeah. Absolutely, that's too high.
Never ever been. Was never not selected for the Lions when he was available. Started, I think, 6 tests.
Shane Williams is above him.
I think he's
in the conversation. I'm not saying we do it. Yeah. I'm saying he should be in the conversation.
Ever, are you talking like in the modern professional era?
Yeah, I think so, because that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Well, ultimately.
I'd say it depends where you put Jason Robinson.
Jason Robinson is probably
Jason Robinson's in that. In the conversation. Shane Williams in the conversation.
Jason Robinson probably has to be the best.
Yeah.
Shane Williams has got to be talked about. And then where does it go? Because I think it might actually go to Tommy Bow.
I can't be having that. That can't be, can it?
Why? He's an amazing
Tommy Bow. Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
We love him, and devilishly handsome man.
Yeah, in 2009, he started 3 tests, one of which was outside centre.
Yeah.
And then in 2013...
Sure, he had another 3 tests.
Yeah, in 2013. Do you not remember his hand injury at the start of the tour? And they had him wearing a GAA or hurling glove to get him back fit.
We're talking about Tommy Bow. With England, Ireland, smashed South Africa.
That's the beauty of a podcast,
isn't it? I just want to talk, right, positives. Two of my favourite moments I'm going to play you now. Well, there was one particular moment where Hendo used Ebenezer Beth as just a speed bump.
Yeah.
Speed bump. Just slowed him down for a moment, but he just walked over him. Oh, and then immediately afterwards, Francois Lowe absolutely creamed Sean O'Brien.
He did, didn't he?
It's such a good moment. So you get a... Here goes Hendo. Hendo running over the top of Etzebeth. Yeah!
Eat that.
And then boom, here's, wait for the boom. Boom!
That's a good hit. Not sure Francois Lowe is a long-term answer for eight, though.
No.
No, he's not. It's interesting because they've not taken Nazim Carr, have they?
No, he's gone to Wasps.
He has gone to Wasps for 3 months.
Mm.
CJ Ostander looked back to his best.
Tell you what, how much must those South Africans be regretting not letting him play at eight now?
How much must they be regretting the farce that are residency rules?
No, it's great. It's great. Yeah. This kind of went exactly how I thought it'd go based on form. Maybe not quite to the extent that Ireland racked up an absolute hammering. Yeah, was it a record win?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. It was, I mean, 38-3. That is one-sided.
No, I think there is a slight mitigating circumstance across the board.
What?
Which actually...
South Africa aren't any good.
Well, there is that.
Why aren't they good though, Tim? Why?
But the penalty count, the number of penalties conceded by Southern Hemisphere sides was abnormally high.
Hmm.
And
are you suggesting some kind of conspiracy theory?
No what? Conspiracy, just this was the first game that they've played under the new laws.
Ah, okay.
And some of the referees, this was their first game refereeing the new laws.
Okay.
Or the new directives, or I don't know how you refer to them now. But so, guess it right. Australia conceded 15 penalties.
Okay.
Wow, that is Wales. A lot. Wales only conceded 4 penalties.
Wow.
And they still lost.
And they still lost.
Well, it's not a big deal, though, this loss.
So South Africa's was Ireland conceded 8, South Africa 13, France conceded 9, New Zealand conceded 14, England conceded 9, Argentina conceded 17. So it was it was 1-2. The home nations versus their opponents, it was 2-1. 30 penalties versus 59 penalties.
That's remarkable.
That is.
Which I think is significant.
Yeah, that is definitely significant.
So that's why I'm saying let's not go overboard overboard on Ireland.
So is it significant, it was an amazing or is it not? Because I'd say 38-3, not significant.
Yeah, that is definitely significant.
I was just trying to mitigate. Yeah, yeah, I was trying to come up with a reason why we don't get too carried away.
Australia beating Wales, again, not significant. I don't think it would have changed the result is what I'm trying to say. Because Australia would have won by more, and I don't think Ireland are going to get beaten.
Yeah. As in, so I think the trend is significant. I don't think it would have changed the result at all.
Agreed.
Do you want to talk about Wales?
Well, just on Ireland, South Africa, for a moment. Any more you want to chuck in?
Just I don't understand why such a proud rugby nation is so bad, and it's a disgrace. I mean... they should be so much better. And I thought they were getting there. And it just shows, I think more than anything, it shows how much political instability affects a team. I mean, when the first port of call is to satisfy the political needs of the union rather than the actual sporting needs, it's never going to go well. And they're kind of just reaping what they sow.
So there is also the incredibly... So on the political issue... the incredibly weak rand at the moment, which means more and more players are playing outside of South Africa, which means that they are still available, but they're not really available when they need to be.
Yeah, I mean, they've got lads like John O'Ross, okay? Now, that guy would be a Springbok any other time, but he probably is exactly the sort of player that you're thinking of, outside of the South African system, purely for the money.
Really?
100%, mate.
You think...
100%.
You're saying he'd definitely be a Springbok?
Yeah, I think he'd be capped.
Oh, capped. All right, but we're talking about like...
Well, I mean, you don't know, do you? But
I've seen 7 games in the Premiership.
I mean, imagine if you've got 7 guys the calibre of John O'Ross over in Europe, which is probably the case in various positions. If they're all in South Africa, one of them will be a regular Springbok. I'm not saying John O'Ross is a Springbok,
yeah, well,
but they're out there.
Well, yeah. So that there are solid pros playing in clubs.
Well, CJ Stander
that might become fringe players.
No, around. We should be absolute nailed on starters. But
John O'Ross would be a nailed on starter for the Springboks.
Listen to what I'm saying.
Well,
right.
that's what I'm. I am.
Phil, explain what I just said.
So what you are trying to say is that there are players like John O'Ross. Okay. There are dozens, in fact, of players like John O'Ross who are playing in Europe who are not playing for the Springboks because of where they are playing.
Correct.
If he was fit, a
much better example would be Francois Steyn.
Yeah.
Who is tearing up trees at Montpellier.
Yes.
Inside centre.
Yes.
And is exactly the kind of inside centre that South Africa could have done with yesterday because he can kick and he can distribute, whereas Diolande is more of a blunt instrument.
Agreed. Mm. With you. Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, I've forgotten the other amazing moment. I'm going to play it to you now, and just so you can see it, it was Kean Healy. Did you see him when he just treated one of the Springbok players like a rag doll? So the South African player runs in. Hold on. Oh, it's crashed.
Never mind.
So there's a bit of a scuffle. South African back runs in as if to sort of pick up the ball for a penalty, and Keaton runs at Kean Healy. Kean Healy just puts his arm out, and the guy just
fires off.
Can I make a point? Okay, this is something which me and Phil noticed yesterday watching the game about the atmospheres and stadiums. Have you noticed that Twickenham feels empty and quiet because you can't see the crowd? You literally can't see the crowd.
When it's dark?
Yeah. So yeah. In Twickenham, they turn down the lights. So it's like you're playing in front of just emptiness. There might be sound, but it's emptiness.
That's interesting.
Millennium Stadium and the Aviva, you can see everyone going wild.
So the whole place is illuminated.
Yeah, it's like all a sea of red or a sea of green. Twickenham is completely black.
Hmm.
Have a look next time. It's almost eerie.
Yeah, definitely keep an eye out for that.
Wales?
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's... Because crikey, we could spend a while talking about that game. So let's, at this point, take a brief break, play a quick game that a listener has come together.
And game.
We're going to be back and saying exactly what we think about Wales. Because what I think what's interesting about this is, and we won't get into it now, so hold. But what's interesting about the Wales thing is, there's quite a lot of positivity and there's quite a lot of really doomsday stuff, and pretty much nothing in between with Wales.
So, we'll get into that.
I'm with you.
So I think it will be interesting one to break down. I want to know where your heads are at with that. So we'll get into that. But from the podcast that brought you Springbok versus Nazi war criminal, from the podcast that brought you US Eagle or
band,
was or it hipster, American
hipster band,
or hipster band, or there was US Eagle, or there was US Eagle or female porn star.
There was, and then there was adult. There's male adult entertainer, or
you know, it was female. That's female. What made it good.
No, I did adult.
Oh right,
and there was also Fijian player or
virus
or medical virus.
Yeah.
So from the podcast that brought you all of those, one of our listeners brings you.
So this is Rob Andrew quote. Or Alan Partridge quote.
3, 2, 1. Aha!
This is great banter.
So, Adam Tebutt.
Jay, can you get this on your phone so we can...
This is great banter.
Because my computer's not loud enough.
I probably can.
Not get it on the computer, Jay.
Or at least an...
I can do...
Or at least an aha or something to punctuate the questions. Partridge.
Oh, yeah. Get an aha.
Okay, you talk. I'll
okay, off. So Adam Tebutt has been in contact on Facebook. So
is that a joke name?
No, T-E-B-B-U-T-T.
T-E-B-B-U-T-T. Tebutt, yeah.
Adam Tebutt. So he's recently been reading two books. One is Rob Andrew Rugby, The Game of My Life. And the other is... Alan Partridge's memoirs from 2016, entitled Nomad. And he's extracted...
This is such good effort.
Right.
Right, so he's extracted some quotes from the two of them. And all you have to do is tell me if it's a Rob Andrew quote or an Alan Partridge quote.
Easy.
This should be very easy. Okay. First one. The added ingredient was Mr. X, who was sometimes...
Go on.
So,
sorry.
Mr. X is blanked out.
Yeah.
So, the added ingredient was Mr. X, who was sometimes a firecracker in the middle of a bonfire. He was no stranger to anger, but frequently managed to turn himself into a bucket of cold water.
Wow.
I really don't know.
I'm going to go with... That sounds so Partridge, which is the whole point of this game, but I'll go Rob Andrew.
That's right. That is the genius of this game.
So Tim's going Rob Andrew, JB.
Partridge, then.
Okay. That was indeed Rob Andrew.
Oh, wow.
Describing Newcastle coach and Wilkinson's kicking coach / life mentor...
Ooh,
Steve Black.
Okay, so...
Tim, 1-0 up.
Aha! It's on the soundboard. Forever.
Question number two. Within minutes of striding into any office, I was, and am, able to identify failing processes, dream up an attitude matrix, and generally map out a road to collective betterment.
Undoubtedly Partridge. Undoubtedly.
I'll go Rob Andrew.
That was Alan Partridge.
Yes!
1-1.
Would you like another aha?
Yes, please.
Aha! Do you know what? That probably sounds more Clive Woodward than Rob Andrew, to be honest. Did you see him on Sky? He's upgraded from a flip chart.
Has he?
He had a PowerPoint presentation this time.
So, you're right and you're wrong there, Tim. Because it does sound very Clive Woodward, but is there any action that Rob Andrew wouldn't take credit for?
Not many.
Yeah, so it could be either.
Being instrumental in bringing Sam Burgess from rugby league. Seems to be one thing, he's washing his hands off completely.
Yeah.
Stroke of genius before he played.
Yeah, anything positive, he's attached to it. Anything negative, he didn't agree with it.
So come on, next one.
Next one. Well, this is a surprise, I say, shaking his hand warmly. It's not a surprise. I knew he'd be here. After a bit of digging, I managed to get my hand on his client list and discovered that he represented Mr. X.
Oh my God, I genuinely can't tell.
So my turn to go first.
Yeah.
Rob Andrew.
The other one.
Tim says Rob Andrew. It's incorrect. This was Alan Partridge on his clandestine approach to Harvey Kennedy when attempting to nail a TV deal for Footsteps of My Father.
Outstanding.
Wonderful. Outstanding.
So 2-1 to JB.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't think I've got any right.
Oh,
yet.
By the way, when I was putting together our entry, which got us nominated for an award at the recent Audio and Radio Industry Awards.
Oh yeah, the one where we didn't cover enough tragedies.
Yes.
Yeah, we didn't quite cover enough tragedies to actually win it.
Well, I guess Springbok or Nazi War Criminal covered a pretty big
tragedy.
That was pretty
heavy stuff.
If we'd have had a little breakdown in the middle and cried and then carried on with the game, we would have won. But actually, right on that Springbok v Nazi War Criminal. You got it wrong, right? So you, I actually won that. I got it right and you gave the point to Phil.
Hey, we're mates, aren't we?
Favouritism.
Anyway, yeah, you are 2-1 up.
Okay, next question. I often found it difficult to sway opinion. A bit like the rival factions in 1980s track and field, when you were either a Sebastian Coe-ite or a Steve Ovett-ist.
Oh, goodness me.
Rob Andrew.
That's got to be Partridge. He's always on about Sebastian Coe. Partridge.
Partridge is incorrect.
What?
That was indeed. What? Rob Andrew.
Streaking away with it.
Rob Andrew describing the divided public opinion as to who played number 10 for England in the late 80s and early 90s. Him or Stuart Barnes.
Was it really that much of a controversy? I don't know. I wasn't really into rugby then.
There's loads of these. I'll do one final one.
Okay.
It is 3-2 to JB, but one final one. There are some who say I had the chance to rescue my reputation and I blew it. And yes, there is some merit in that argument. I feel I struck a genuine chord with the public by tearing off a strip of the bully boy tactics of Mr. X. And for a few days, I was something of a folk hero.
I have no idea. I don't. Rob Andrew. I don't know.
Partridge. I love that it's so hard to tell.
That was indeed Alan Partridge discussing his decision to broadcast live with Pat Farrell, who had taken staff of Gordale Media hostage.
Wow.
Well, there you go.
Good luck, Sussex Cricket. Sussex Cricket is where he is now. Oh, what is that?
Oh, just Partridge music.
Oh, right. I thought it was my computer.
Oh, I picked the wrong song. It was going to be a Paul Simon one. The one that goes... But I can't remember what that's called now. I got the wrong song. Doesn't matter. Great game. Paul
Great
Tebbutt.
Banter. Well done.
Adam Tebbutt.
That's a real thought there.
It's very, very
the effort
good.
Effort is not gone unnoticed. And if you have a game that you
send that
you
man a tie.
Suggest... Yeah, yeah, you've got yourself a tie, fella. Well done. Come
Adam,
to you.
Yeah, get in
Actually,
touch.
Actually, no, you've got a T-shirt.
Okay.
Wales.
Right. Wales.
Let's do it.
In fact, just very briefly, before we get into Wales, here's an advert.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
That was an advert. That was very good as well. I like that one.
Yeah, I really like that interlude. Really That's like one that. Of my favourites. That
was it's right up there. Top 10 all-time interlude. Mm.
It is like almost the Tommy Bow of adverts, that one.
Almost. It's true. In the conversation.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Right, Wales.
Wales, where do we start with Wales?
Well, I'll tell you what. Start with your sort of overall sense of good, bad on that spectrum, because I'm a little unsure how to feel, and a lot of people are swaying me in different directions with the way they've written about it since and talked about it since. I can't quite work out whether that is a big positive for Wales or...
Well, it's nothing to worry about, okay, because they're in a, what, best of 27 series with Australia.
So, yeah, this is 12 consecutive district defeats to Australia.
But we know what's going to happen next, right?
So 13 consecutive wins.
Yeah, so not really bothered about winning the entire series. Okay, so they did quite well. I mean, I'm not joking when I say three of the Wales pack might not start for sale. So, Ball, Francis, Navidi probably wouldn't start for sale. That's a worry. And Owen Williams, gone.
I'm wondering why you picked Sale.
Just because I was thinking like, well... Just thought of a team.
Bottom end premiership team.
Yeah, but that, exactly. A bottom end premiership team. Three of the pack would not have started for sale, probably.
I'm with you on that, yeah.
And yet Navidi was good.
Is a takeaway for me, actually. Navidi was good.
Well, it's one of the things we were talking about yesterday when we were watching the game, which is the difference the shirt makes to players. I mean, you put on an international shirt and I think your effort level goes up another 10%. I mean, it's not conscious because you're professional and you always try harder, but the shirt does make a difference.
That's an interesting point, actually. So if you go back to the England game and you contrast Underhill and Slade... Mm. They both played a similar number of times. They're both by no means established starters. Underhill, the effort of tackling and rucking is brilliant. Slade, the effort going into passing or decision-making, the effort doesn't help.
No.
It's what comes naturally in those positions. Mm. Anyway, that's just an interesting interlude.
And that leads me on to Owen Williams, who is a really nice player. He's really good. I mean, I watched him quite close up when they came up to the AJ Bell. And I was impressed with him when he came on, even though they got battered by the 58 points to whatever it was.
I want to make a quick observation very briefly. Sorry, yeah, I didn't mean to stop you in tracks. But you, last week, you proactively swerved away from any mentions of Sale. This week you've just sprinkled a couple in. Are we
it's more than a couple.
You feel like it feels like you're. It feels like you're. This is like the seven stages of grief. It feels like you're working through. Working through.
Well,
your
take
band.
Me back. Well, I've got some sale news later. Actually, we'll get into that. where was I?
Owen Williams.
Owen Williams.
Promising.
Yeah, I think he did all right.
So I think he did some stuff very well. What he didn't do well enough was get enough attacking ball to the likes of Liam Williams and Jonathan Davis. So I agree with you. I think he did. And everything he did was positive.
Yeah.
But you didn't get, and maybe that's not his fault, maybe it's more the pack weren't winning enough clean ball and giving him enough opportunities to do it, and perhaps they kicked away a bit too much. But I wanted every time Jonathan Davies got his hand on the ball, he looked dangerous. Every time Liam Williams got front foot ball, he looked dangerous. But that didn't happen quite enough.
Yes, agreed.
And when you get Tulipe Faletau in the outside channels.
Oh, how good is he, by the way?
Uncharacteristic really fumbles and stuff. Yes, just to balance that up. He is obviously amazing.
He's just so good. He's so, so good. So there's some in-depth analysis for you. I thought Steph Evans was really effective.
Yeah. More ball in Steph Evans' hands.
Yeah. For all the chat about him not being big enough, I just thought he was brilliant.
That was odd.
Oh, yeah.
There was some,
yeah, talk about this.
There was some odd commentary all in this weekend.
John Inverdale's question.
John Inverdale's question is, how does someone who's only 14 stone possibly stop someone who's 17 stone?
Don't know, John. Never happened. Never happened in the history of the world ever.
What?
Who did he ask it to? Was it?
Well, but by that logic, if Uini Antonio is playing a game against England, he's just going to run through everyone because no one's within 3 stone.
We're
going
to have to get who's that world's strongest man guy?
Magnussen or whatever.
Eddie Hall playing.
Eddie Hall,
yeah, playing
right?
Picking
England. For England because nobody can.
He's 30 stone.
No one can tackle him.
How does a man of 25 stone tackle a man of 27 stone? I don't know, John. I don't know.
Has John Inverdale just been playing Joe Nolomu rugby and thinking it's real life?
But I think that he asked that to Sam Warburton, who was baffled.
Yeah.
Well, you wrap your arms, a ring of steel,
lasso.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
Sam Warburton, by the way, I like him as a pundit.
I agree with that. He's much in the same way Johnny Wilkinson, when he goes, I quite like Johnny Wilkinson. It's like you wouldn't want them to do anything other than just talk about rugby and break down the analysis.
Yeah, yeah.
They're so fanatical about it. They love it so much that they're brilliant. Paul O'Connell's amazing. He sounds like he's talking at half speed.
Yeah, he does.
He sounds like he's taken a tranquilizer dart from. But what he says is brilliant.
Yeah.
Do we agree Sam Warburton is one of the finest international captains last 10 years since Martin Johnson?
I'm actually with you on that.
Yeah.
I didn't think that for a long time. And I was, particularly in 2013, I was so sceptical of a 23-year-old or 24-year-old, whatever he was at that time, being picked to captain that tour, particularly when Bod was there, O'Driscoll was there. There were so many experienced older heads. I think he's...
Right,
brilliant.
So let me give you a follow-up question, which I want to know your opinion on.
Well, I would just say my answer to that question is absolutely yes, but he could only be an international captain in the professional era.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he wouldn't be... I think a captain in the amateur era has to have all of the things that they have and be able to have a 3-day bender.
Immediately before playing a test match.
Exactly. Well, you kind of... on to what I was going to say next, which is... even though he's one of the best international captains, is he one of the best players in the last 10 years? Like, say, another top five scenario. And the reason I say this is, do you think it's going to be a little bit of a black mark against his name that he's never done anything at club level? Like, literally nothing of any substance whatsoever?
No.
Really?
World Cups and Lions Tours.
Do you think that's all that matters?
Not all that matters, no.
So, the reason I say this is, if you think about the real greats, so, and he is... internationally, definitely one of them. But Morten Johnsen kind of feathers his nest a little bit with Heineken Cups, Premierships. So yeah. does Laurence Dallaglio. So does Paul O'Connell.
Phil
so
Vickery.
Does, yeah. So does Brian O'Driscoll. So I'm wondering if the tail end of Warburton's career is going to be hunting down club success rather than international success.
No, it'll be sticking with Wales so he can just play a handful of games and play for Wales.
I think he's missing a trick, you know.
So I think that's probably what he will do. I think he will get to World Cup 2023 by playing at Cardiff. Or, sorry, not playing at Cardiff, but being on the payroll of Cardiff so he can professionally train. I think he might, when he gets to 40, regret that.
Yeah,
not having a crack at going to Saracens or going to Toulon or Clermont or somewhere.
The Lions tours are great. The Six Nations stuff is great. It's unlikely he's winning the World Cup. So the other thing you're going to want is success at club level. Even if it's Pro 14 success, that'd be something. That's not going to happen. So Heineken Cup with Saracens, take a pay cut,
or not take a pay cut. I mean, take an official pay cut.
Yeah. So you don't get paid in other ways.
Yeah.
Like how would you get paid there?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
No,
JP.
I don't know.
No one knows. but Saracens would be a good club because they seem to. Well, they would have enough players that they could. They seem to wrap their players in Cornwall a little bit. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
Deep squad, isn't it? Through the pay structure they employ.
All those accountants.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, back to the game.
Right, so I've got a big, big negative.
Go for it.
Warren Gatland.
Oh, why?
Let me qualify this. What is Warren Gatland? This is something I've talked about before. What is Warren Gatland's problem with replacements? So last year, he does not bring them on. He brought them on way too late where they could have no big material effect on the game. And the impact that they have, like the way Eddie Jones uses them between 50 and 60, 65 minutes, he brought them all on in the with more than 70 minutes on the clock. What are you doing?
Maybe he doesn't trust them.
Well, I'm looking down the replacement bench list. I think that has got a lot to do with it. So, the replacement bench: Dacey, Smith, Brown, Corey Hill, Sam Cross,
Lyon, Corey Hill,
Davis, Owen Watkin, and Hallam Amos.
Yeah, Hallam Amos with the try.
But those players with 100% in the tank. Versus some of the guys they could replace. I don't know.
Yeah.
This is not just today, and he's done this in the past with other replacements and stuff. He waits until the game has already slipped away before he makes a handful of changes.
So can I just say, I did an interview once with Phil Davis, and I'm not saying this is the case, far from it, but it's interesting what he said. He said at Namibia, they have a system, right, of green, amber, red. So green is you can play a whole 80 at international level. Amber is you've got maybe 40 good minutes, and then red is less than that in emergencies. And I wonder if when Gatland looks through his list, he goes, right, I've got all my green numbers on, and I've just got these guys, and that's the only thing that I can do is if I absolutely have to at the end of the game, I can bring them on, but they're not going to beat Australia.
That it is not a good bench. That it's a downright awful bench, in all honesty, for an international bench. Yeah.
They did exactly. What did I predict? 10 points or 15 point loss? Something like that.
10 points. It was 8 points. Mm. I got a bit frustrated with Wales just because they didn't feel like they utilised the ball that they had. And they did have some ball in good positions, but even the. Who scored that first try? Was it Williams? No, it was Steph Evans in the corner.
Yeah.
Even that try, it felt like they were trying to mess it up. Mm. They were all... So it was passed from the right-hand side of the pitch to the left-hand side of the pitch. There was a brilliant bit of hands by... Was it Bigger? But then after that, everyone just drifted and ate up and ate up and ate up Steph Evans' space.
Yeah. I think that... having...
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
I spent the day today at Parky Scarlett's, the Anglo-Welsh Cup, Exeter v...
What's it like down there, Tim?
Yes, yeah, it's a
good decent, rugby ground? Good decent, feeling about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those modern grounds, but at least it's a rugby ground, not a football ground that's being used for rugby. So, anyway. But I was down there, and Exeter are the best at... They're the most lethal 5 metres out.
Yeah.
I think possibly at any level of rugby, Wales are quite probably the worst team from 5 metres out. they're terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a nice overlap. They had like a two-man overlap, and all they had to do was execute pass, right-handed passing from one side of the pitch to the other, and they almost messed it up.
Yeah, and... The last man to give the pass was Lee Halfpenny.
I know.
And you're waiting for the looped pass slightly behind Steph Evans, like 3 inches behind him.
But before giving that pass, he drifts
like
5 metres towards Steph Evans just to allow the defence to get right across.
He loves that. He really does.
I want to say a positive from this game.
Yeah.
Glenn Jackson.
Yeah.
Someone with real empathy. I loved it. That a referee who's played the game at a top level, and the moment where Gareth Davis tried to do that little, like, swirling around. Oh, sir. Oh.
He's lying all over the ball.
Yeah. Get up and play.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Get up and play.
I like that.
We said that as we were watching.
Gareth Davis played very well. I like him. He gets a lot of stick for a guy who's very good.
Yeah. Reese who?
Well, that is actually what will happen in about 6 months' time.
Yeah, it really will be.
So I do feel that this Welsh performance, though, is a little bit symptomatic of where Wales are as a nation generally. So, like, the regional rugby structure is still a mess. No one knows if they're super clubs, if they're regions, what they are. You know, you went to Scarlets today. Yes, it's Anglo-Welsh, but the crowd was terrible. The crowds have been, you know, they've not been good for a long, long time.
Well, So they've got 12 internationals away with Wales,
mm-hmm.
and
someone made this point to me on Twitter, and quite frankly, I don't care.
No, they've got 12 internationals away, and so they had 23 other guys that were involved last week in Pro 14. Only four of those were involved today, so that's 12 and 19, 31 players. They just didn't bother. Well, no.
Okay, so
but my point is, so they don't even care about the Anglo-Welsh.
Yeah, we'll come on to that later. But it just
they used Llanelli Rugby Club, Llandovery, and Carmarthen.
That's right. Yeah, they players. Yeah. So the whole thing is just a bit of a mess, and the Welsh media is so negative about everything. So they're basically counting down the days till one of the regions eventually goes bankrupt. It's just like, if you can compare it to the Irish system, it's an absolute mess. That's all I want to say.
I'm counting down the days till Kirtley Bill completes his transition to flanker with Johnny May.
It's on its way, isn't it?
We need one more for a back row.
There's got to be a barbarian selection committee out there somewhere with a sense of humour.
that was incredible.
Good. It was brilliant. Especially with the fact that the Johnny May thing. Must have been so. It went so viral.
It's like
Kirtley Beale was in England at the time.
It's like a wake up call. Anyone who might be doing that, just at least watch what a flanker does.
How many scrums are there in every game that Kirtley Beale has played his whole life?
So he was binding on behind the second row.
Yeah.
But he had his hand on the back of the prop's knee, like pushing the prop's knee towards the ground.
Oh, imagine that. Imagine that.
Push anywhere just on the prop, just not on the knee, not on the back of the knee.
Out of interest, how do you think Wales Online are going to cover this? Five things we now know about Australia. Things you must click now. Well, some real bona fide journalism going on there.
Well, the bona fide journalism. And by the way, I got complimented on saying bona fide, and you've been saying bona fide.
Oh, is there a difference?
The English and American.
Oh,
if you want to do it proper English, bona fide. Yeah. Anyway.
Is it Latin?
Well, the Wales...
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're quite right, Phil. It's Latin.
Well, anyway. Bona fide, Wales Online have probably got 28 different articles out now of pure clickbait.
Well, one bit of bona fide, slightly one-eyed Welsh analysis was calling Kirtley Beale's try a knock-on. Even though the TV cameras... couldn't see the ball. There was Martin Williams was there going, "Oh, definitely a knock on that. Luke knocked it on. You can't see the ball."
It's not a knock-on.
There was no camera shot that showed the ball.
Australia
being
were
on.
Just better.
I loved that try. Yeah, that Curtly Beale rip.
Sorry,
brilliant.
Not Curtly Beale. Curtly Steele.
That.
Oh.
Oh. Why is that? Oh, that was meant to be the Seinfeld base. Why is. There we go. My sound effects are.
They're all over the place today, Tim. That steal was so good because Curtly Beale was already 50 metres in the other direction and Tulipe Faletau was still clearing out the ruck.
Mm.
It was amazing.
Yeah. It was heartbreaking. It was basically the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
And then, do you want to talk about Scotland? Should we move on from this one?
Just a couple of other things I wanted to mention with this. Someone I know you spotted and liked, JB, Corvetti.
Rapid. Yeah, not how he spelled his name. Thanks, Phil.
What?
You gave me the spelling of his name. I spelled it Corvetti or Corvetti?
It's Betty, but spelt Vetti.
Don't blame me for yours.
I thought Corvetti.
Oh, right. You're mistyping.
There's multiple search engines.
Thanks, mate.
There's multiple search engines.
Yeah, but I've got Phil next to me.
Okay. the other things, just talking about we're reunited again with that commentary team, Jiffy and Eddie Butler. Jiffy telling us about overlaps. And he started giggling loads in this commentary. I don't know if you noticed this. He was just randomly giggling at times. And what I like about this week was the number of times he just went, danger! Danger!
He gets a real hard rap. Jiffy, I think he's a really good analyst, actually.
Oh, I'm not knocking that. It's just I quite like the he watches it, and I quite appreciate this. He's very passionate,
a
bit like a fan.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just says as if he's sat in a seat in the ground. He just, it's on, it's on. Yeah. Overlap. Danger. I quite like it.
I quite like Jiffy. I'm one of the few people who seems to not mind. I'm not saying I like him, but I don't mind Brian Moore as well.
No, I'm not buying that one.
So I rewatched the England game. I had the it was like the extended highlights, the hour long extended highlights, which is basically the whole game on the BBC. Mm. So it was Brian Moore. I didn't mind
like the Donald Trump of rugby, as far as I'm concerned. If you watch his Twitter, it's almost indistinguishable.
I want to know what Lee Halfpenny says during his kick. If anyone is a lip reader. And can work it out because he strikes it and then he's just before he starts his run up he says something. I don't know.
Yippee-ki-yay.
I don't know what he says, but he says something, and I want a lip reader to tell me what it is.
And then
I really liked the refereeing decisions. The fact that the benefit of the doubt was given to the attacking sides across the board, it seemed this weekend, which was really nice to see. I don't think that was a Halim Amos try, but quite happy it was given. Fine.
By that point, it was completely immaterial as well.
It was. So, are you positive, JB, overall? It sounds like you've got plenty.
No, not really.
No.
They are about where they should be. Everyone says they should be winning X amount of games. I think I said I expect them not to win anything until Georgia. So, they'll beat Georgia next week. Although that could be much tougher than they realise. Much, much tougher.
Oh, that Georgia try, and if you haven't seen the video...
it's great, isn't it? Oh, there's 42,000 people in that stadium.
Yeah.
Against Canada. It's an example of never give up. A guy, just commando action hero.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't give up if I knew...
Hollywood did a try, that try is what it would be.
Yeah.
It might have an explosion when he hit the advertising hoardings afterwards. But.
And also, if I knew that there's French top 14 scouts in the crowd, I'm not giving up anytime soon.
He was certainly committed to the game.
Yeah, very committed to the game.
Oh, my goodness me. I've just seen a picture that I hadn't seen that our friend of the pod, Nick Mullins, tweeted. So I'm going to turn this round. And
is it of Curtly Beale?
Yes.
Seen it.
In trunks. With Prince William.
Oh, after the game.
Yeah. Is this the Harvey Weinstein stuff again?
Curtly Beale in some Speedos.
Nice.
And Prince William is holding an Australia jersey, it looks like. But he's holding it in front of his crotch area. I don't know if he feels a bit insecure.
Prince William's in trunks?
No.
Prince William.
Curtly Beale's in trunks. He's just been he's just been handed an Australia jersey by the look of it.
Very good.
So, yeah. There you go. With that image in your head.
So, the only game of the weekend I've not seen is Scotland. Did anyone see it?
I did. I watched most of the game, actually. It was... So, Scotland... If you're going to talk positives, talk Scotland's attack. If you're going to talk negatives, talk Scotland's defence.
Really?
It was defence optional for Scotland. Now, that perhaps is being a little bit unfair on Samoa, because Samoa came out to play and they had a very exciting back line led by Tim Nanai Williams at 10,
which was
a very interesting selection. But it just meant they were going to run pretty much everything. And that's what he did. And they did. And Scotland did make some mistakes. They turn over some ball. But they also finish off some tries beautifully. So there are positives to take from Scotland. There was some interesting commentary. So we spoke about some of the interesting commentary already. Two of the interesting bits of commentary on the English guys, the Scottish guys who have played in England or are playing in England. So Chris Harries, when he came on, they had no idea who he was. So they were just reading from the sheet and saying what they could see. So Chris Harries comes on here, Newcastle Falklands Academy, studied architecture at university, and he appears to have a long stride, long gait, this lad. You're just saying what you can see.
Nice, good.
And then in the warm-up pre-game, Gregor Laidlaw was describing the positives of... Greg Laidlaw was describing the positives of the strength in depth that the team has. And he said, in years gone by, if we were down to our fifth choice loose head, it would be some nobody. We'd be getting a guy out of the stands. Whereas in this, we're down to our fifth choice and we've got Daryl Marfo coming in.
Poor Daryl. He's really taken a bit of a hammering over the autumns.
He had a good game.
Yeah, well, I think he
genuinely had a good game.
There's an article about him today, from Exeter scrap heap to starting for Scotland. Now, I'm not sure if that's a compliment to him or a knock on Scotland.
he played well. He did play very well.
Well, Thomas Francis has been playing for Wales as Exeter's third choice tight head.
Completely agree, mate.
Was Daryl Marfo at Exeter? He was Quinns, wasn't he?
I thought he was Exeter.
Anyway.
Maybe he was.
Anyway, don't know. There you go. I wanted to mention about this, but I can't remember. No, it's gone.
Scotland play... It does get a little bit tougher next week.
All Blacks?
All Blacks. So, if they defend like they did, All Blacks will score. Well, Samoa scored 38 points. So, Samoa, who lost 70-something nil to the All Blacks earlier this year. So, if Scotland defend like that, it will be a lot. They will concede a lot of points. But they might also score quite a few.
Good.
France, New Zealand, briefly. We watched this one.
Yeah,
good game. Bowden Barrett, when he can goal kick as well, we need to be really scared because he could kick this weekend. He could.
He did.
He had his kicking boots on.
Yeah.
If only Bowden Barrett. If only someone like Bougelaar gets Bowden Barrett and pairs him with Owen Farrell in midfield, the world would end.
Well, so Bowden Barrett was 100%. Kicking success this weekend, including a number from the touchline.
Yes.
Well, that's a weird thing about him. It doesn't seem, and a lot of bad kickers seem to do this, nail it from the touchline.
Yeah.
The ones you expect them to get, they don't get.
Yeah. Although this week, he got 100% of the kicks he did take this week. Mm. This was a fascinating game. So, first half, it was 4-0 to New Zealand. 4-1 to New Zealand, but New Zealand were utterly dominant. Mm. Then, second half, France just exploded out of the blocks. And for 38 minutes of that second half, France were totally dominant, but couldn't quite get over the whitewash for the... If they'd scored another try to bring them within 7 points, it would have been completely game on. Mm. But they just couldn't quite... They got so close so many times, but couldn't quite get there. And then the classic Beauden Barrett sucker punch in the last minute.
He does that so well.
Intercept from five metres from his own line and just glides in 95 metres.
It's the ruthlessness that New Zealand have when they are on. The greasy conditions, they did spill a lot of ball. They did make quite a lot of errors. The error count was relatively high from a lot of teams this weekend. But Aaron Smith's hair is the other thing I've got to talk about. It looks like he's been in Exeter for a few days.
Really?
It's terrible.
So, yeah, you know, the Exeter barber follows us on Twitter.
It's got to be a parody account, that.
No, no. Deadly serious. And I asked him to come on for a bit of a feature. And he won't do it until he speaks to the lads first. So, you know, there are other podcasts out there getting some stars, but we get the real big ones.
Well, we might get one of the real big
ones. There's a strong possibility at some point we might get the access to Barber.
If Don Armand gives him the nod.
So I was chatting to some guys from Exeter today, and so Sam Hill's got a shaved head, and that was losing a bet. And a lot of the haircuts apparently are bet related.
Really?
Yes.
I knew Henry Slade wouldn't have that haircut for by choice. He's such a handsome man with such a bad haircut.
So generally, one of the ways they do it is as a little bit of a forfeit.
I'm not being funny, though. What a terrible forfeit. I mean, if you're going to hide a comical hairstyle, Exeter would be the place to do it.
One of the forfeits, apparently you get offered eyebrows or hair. And so Sam Hill picks hair. Last season, apparently, Luke Cowan-Dickey ended up picking both. And so he had his hair and his eyebrows.
What are they betting on?
God, I don't know. I didn't get pint that level of information. But also,
I would assume this is to stop them from drinking.
Yeah.
But also, in terms of Exeter, one brilliant thing. Again, you may not have watched the Anglo-Welsh Cup on BT Sport. Absolutely fine. If you did, you would have seen.
I watched a lot of it.
And one thing I've really enjoyed is being able to go to the dressing rooms of the teams and get a little bit of stuff that you don't normally get. So,
all right, Tim.
All right.
Stealing some stash out of their bags when they're not looking. No, I was...
I hope to God nothing's gone missing this weekend.
I was...
Rolex. That's a very nice watch you're wearing, Tim.
All adds up.
I was in the Exeter dressing room today, and I didn't know they did this until today. And I don't think anyone knew they did this until... This was the great thing about being in the dressing room. So they have their names, even on away games, they have their names like a plaque above their peg, by their peg, with their shirt and everything laid out. And you get your name in white text if you've got under 50 caps, bronze if you've got 50 to 100, silver if you've got over 100, gold if you get 150 caps or more for Exeter Chiefs. So Phil Dolman was the guy I was chatting to. He was the only one there who had gold lettering.
That's so cool.
So you could be a World Cup winner.
Yeah.
Superstar, turn up, you're white. You have to earn the gold name in the dressing room.
That's awesome.
So good.
I really like it.
Yeah.
It's
I like
an insight
that.
Into how Exeter work.
God, and they bring their pegs with them.
Not the pegs, but there's pegs in dressing rooms, isn't there?
No, sorry. So today you were at Scarlett's, yeah?
Yes.
So where did the name
They brought the plaques with them.
Got ya.
They bring the plaques to all the away games.
Yeah.
And then presumably they put them up in the home dressing rooms as well.
Yeah, because in the home dressing rooms, I imagine they'd be over their little box.
Yeah, but it's done in like squad number.
Yeah. That's so smart. When Dollars is playing 15, he'll slot into number 15. However,
that's really cool.
I like that.
It was nice. Yeah.
Are we talking about Anglo-Welsh now?
Just the Welsh team's got absolutely humped. What was the aggregate score, English v Welsh clubs?
It was
a lot.
174-19 was the aggregate score.
So last week in the Anglo-Welsh, I felt really positive about it. I thought, this competition knows what it is now. It's a mixture of academy lads and fringe players. Fringe players trying to get their place, and then academy lads trying to step up to senior side.
Well, that is exactly what it is.
Well, yes, that's what I thought it was. The Welsh regions are simply not strong enough to support it. So the Welsh regions are not just getting lads in from, you know, their fringe squads. They are getting lads in from, like, Welsh Premiership and all over the place.
No, I get that they...
They're just not strong enough.
Well, they're choosing not to.
Yeah, because they're not. I mean, like, so Exeter.
Scarlets have a squad of 51 players.
That's massive.
And they only used
that's
four.
That's enormous.
And they only used four of them.
Well, so why? Yeah.
Big question. So they'll have half a dozen plus away internationals. Probably 10,
12
away internationals.
So that still leaves you 29.
Let's say,
39.
Let's say they've got another eight injured players, because I saw Cubby Boy in the gym and a few others. So that's 20.
They've got
so
20. Still, they've got 23 professional players that are professional rostered players.
So I don't understand.
And they didn't. And they only used four of them.
That's on them, really.
Yeah,
Well, exactly. This is what I'm saying. So I think they do have the players. They just choose not to. And I think it's. And I think Rob Vickerman on BT Sport sort of nailed it really succinctly when he said that English teams use it in the short term to give to give game time to their fringe players.
Yeah.
And as much as everyone was going on about Exeter having a really, what a great team they have, there was only 9 Premiership starts in their 15.
Is that right?
From this season.
From this season.
That's amazing.
But so that does have Devoto and Hill who are just coming back from injury.
Yeah. So I mean, but even in the rest of it, there's it is Exeter's fringe players. It's just their squad is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So they use it. So Premiership sides are using it in the short term to give game time to players who will be involved in the first team, and the Welsh sides are using it for the long term and giving it as the first taste of rugby for 18, 19, 20 year olds.
Yeah.
I think it does demonstrate in a way where these teams are at, because it's very clear to me that Exeter were using this as a competition to win back a spot in the first team. Whereas I don't think it would matter what you did in a flathy shirt today. It just...
Well, how are you going to get back in the first team if there isn't this competition? If you're Kai Horseman or...
I completely agree.
Or Sam Hill.
Completely agree.
Or Devoto.
Sam Hill and Devoto. So you got Slade and Witten, who are both playing very well. But if you get Hill and Devoto also pushing for those places, that can only be good for Exeter.
And there's Campagnaro somewhere.
Who's obviously in long-term injured.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the Welsh squad, I think the Welsh teams need to work out how they want to use this competition and maybe use it a bit better.
Mm. Well, I think they have decided, and that's their prerogative.
Mm. And it's a shame as well because...
But it is a shame because it's just the competition. It might as well just be called the Anglo Cup.
Yeah, so like Bath this weekend, that looked like a really good crowd.
It was.
Another one as well. There's a couple, like last week I thought, this is brilliant.
Saracens last week was fairly full.
Yes, that's the one. But throughout the weekend and the last weekend, a lot of the Premiership grounds looked fairly lively.
Was the AJ Bell? How many were in there?
I didn't get to see it. I was going to go, but...
But you got turned away at the door.
Chalkester. Yeah. All right, so has anyone noticed Sale are playing in an orange kit?
I've noticed some pretty bold kits.
Okay, do you want to know why they play in an orange kit?
Because they loved that horrific bright yellow one so much and they wanted more neon colours. Like to roll like it was the 80s and they were having a rave.
Close. Anyone else? Well, it's only you, I guess.
Anyone else? Is it something to do with West Side Story?
No, it's not something to do with West Side Story.
Is it to do with...
So has anyone
Josh Charnley's fake tan?
Simon Orange.
No, it's not actually. I never even put two and two together. No, it isn't that either.
That would be pretty vainglorious to do something like that.
I would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, they could do. I'm sure they could do a diamond design as well.
Oh yes, orange diamonds. That would be so good. So, if you've seen Sale recently, you'll notice that their away kit is that old away kit from last year.
Okay.
They've got a change kit for Europe.
Yeah.
Where the sponsor looks very nice and very prominent. It's actually the sponsor's colours. The reason they don't play in the orange kit, which was the original away kit, was because the sponsor was not happy in any way, shape or form about how the UK Fast stands out against the orange. So they canned it.
Really?
And they went back to last year's kit. Amazing.
So that's why they're still in the... They weren't meant to be in the Illuminous Yellow?
No. They're meant to be in orange. And then there was whispering. I was like, why aren't you in the orange kit? Oh, well, you know, we never were meant to be. It turns out because UK Fast didn't like the logo.
Mm. Well, this goes back to our thing about as much as you want to have your consistent branding, actually, it does more for your brand if you are sympathetically...
Correct.
Sympathetic colours on the jersey.
Definitely.
Exactly right. And the other thing I was going to mention is... I can confirm that Sale have offered a very large contract to a certain Joe Launchbury.
Who has turned it down, apparently.
Is that right?
Yeah, £500,000.
Yeah, which is a lot.
£500,000 non-marquee player as well.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever... Well, he might have considered it, but I don't think he would have considered it for long.
I don't know. I mean,
his agent would have loved the story being out there because it's been...
Yeah. £500,000's a lot of cash, obviously.
Yeah. So is £250,000 that you'll probably get if you are a regular England player.
I don't think he needs to worry about that. I really don't. Because, well, the Currys will be in England. He's a good enough player. He's got credit in the bank, so on and so forth. Here's what I am worried about, though. £500K. I mean, just take Sale out of the equation. We spoke about Itoje and Cruyff. Second rows are not worth £500K. There's too many of them. They're too plentiful. If you're going to spend that money, spend it on fly halves and scrum halves and tight head props.
Or very talented inside centres.
Yes.
Who there are very, very few of.
Yeah. Do not spend it on second rows. It is madness. And probably a little bit of a symptom of what happens when it's the first time you've had money in a long, long time. You don't know how to spend it. And this is exactly what would happen.
Well, this is also like a lot of people going, clubs are going to have to cut their cloth with salary caps and increasing wages and stuff. No, what's going to happen is big name players are going to command massive wages.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have squads where you're going to have lots of 30, 40, 50K players putting through the meat grinder.
Well, I guess
have that little blue pill and just patch yourself up and play. And then you wrap your major assets up and really, really look after them financially and in every other way. I'm sure they'll look after... No, I don't mean to say they won't look after their players, but you know what I mean.
I agree. I'm not saying they would jeopardise the players. I'm just saying that the teams that do that are going to become very unsuccessful. You know, there'll be a natural market... You know, there'll be a market rate in which you pay players. Teams like Exeter that do it so much better than anyone else. I mean, that Exeter team, like we keep carry on saying, isn't full of stars. A lot of the Saracens lads weren't stars before they went to Saracens. So you'll have more teams that are successful like that.
And I love the way Exeter do it. They do due diligence like... well, you're a financial advisor, JB. They'll go...
I don't do due diligence on anything, mate, but go on.
But no, Exeter do. They do all of that background research. They know exactly what they're getting when they get a player.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can you imagine Rob Baxter scrambling for the phone when he finds out that Marlon Yard is available to sign?
That's a very good point.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right there. The due diligence is spot on.
Right, so I think, and I've just been, while we were doing the podcast, very unprofessionally, I've been just been messaging with some guys, with our friends from the Green and Gold podcast in Australia.
Ooh.
And we're hoping to fix up a special England-Australia preview podcast with them. So our Aussie compadres and
half 6 in the morning on Tuesday is the only time that I can do it.
All right, well, we'll work on that. But so we're hopefully going to have, coming your way this week, an England-Australia preview podcast with the guys from the Green and Gold, who are good lads, and effectively us down under. And we'll probably put together some kind of other podcast previewing the other autumn international games. So we won't bother with that right now. Is that right with you? Is that right with you?
Fine by me.
Absolutely.
So just a quick reminder that we have a Tier 2 tour coming up in March. The autumn internationals, as much as we want it to last forever, they will be gone. And then the next big international rugby to look forward to will be the Six Nations. During that period, there will also be the Tier 2 tournament. What's it called? The Rugby Europe Championship.
Yeah, Rugby Europe Nations Cup.
Germany beat Brazil.
They did.
Next week, Spain are in action against Canada.
Ooh.
One little story we didn't mention last week that we should have done, that I forgot. Chile beat New Zealand in sevens.
Did they?
That's a huge rugby story.
I thought we did mention that, no?
I don't think we did.
No, I don't think we did. I meant to. News to my ears.
Oh, is it? Maybe it's on the rugby group that we have. Oh, I don't know.
So our Facebook page, Egg Chasers, facebook.com/eggchasers, has all the details for the Tier 2 tour. We're going to Madrid, March 10th, 11th. We're going to be out there on the Friday to the Monday. Come with your mates. Come and see our live podcast that we're doing, a rugby brunch podcast before we go and see Spain versus Germany. That's on the Sunday, where there will be one confirmed, rubber-stamped, incredible little surprise that World Rugby are organising, and other surprises in the works.
Furthermore,
yes,
the second surprise is provisionally on, and now there's a third surprise.
What?
Which means we might need to change our footwear. That's how.
Change our footwear.
Yeah.
Hmm. Mm.
But it's
interesting.
It is genuinely massive.
I
couldn't. If this happens, I genuinely couldn't be more proud that it happened.
That's cryptic. And the footwear thing. Okay, so I guess it's on the postcard. But the bottom line is, we're going to be boozing. We're going to be watching Six Nations rugby in a quaint little authentic Spanish tapas bar called O'Neill's.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing a live podcast and going.
I think you say O'Neill's with a lisp on the end, mate.
O'Neill.
Yes.
And then going to watch two of the emerging rugby nations, Spain and Germany, play in a tier two competition. Flights are still dirt cheap from all over the UK and Ireland. So find out all the details. Come and join us. Book your places on the live podcast and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
One more thing before we go.
Oh. Go on.
World Rugby's Try of the Year.
Oh, yes.
So there's a vote on Twitter. If you go onto World Rugby, at World Rugby's page, or we have retweeted it. The vote for Try of the Year, there are four brilliant tries. Tuchulet for Argentina against England. The Sean O'Brien try after the Liam Williams break. Portia Woodman scoring for New Zealand against USA. And Georgia's scrum half scoring a magnificent try. I think it's against Ireland in the under-20s World Cup. We will vote now. Any preference on what... I think it should be the Sean O'Brien try, just because of where it was.
The context.
The context is... So it's a brilliant try from... It's a 90-metre try, and the context makes it that extra bit more special.
I think it's got to be. That Tuchulet try was awesome, the Argentina one.
Tuchulet try was amazing. Denny Solomona did miss two tackles in that try.
Yeah.
I'm going to vote. I'm going to vote for Sean O'Brien. So go on there, have a look. And you boys might actually see the winner being announced. In Monaco.
Oh, God, yeah, we're going to Monaco in 2 weeks. That's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got myself some new tweed for that. I don't know if I'm going to wear it, but I've got some tweed.
You don't know if you're going to wear
it. No, it might be too hot on the south, on the Med.
Well, that's it. And also,
you might have to go just in a white shirt with three buttons undone.
Yeah. And also, it's not very Med, is it?
No, linen. Need a linen suit.
Is it not black tie?
Not for us, it's not, no. We're media. We're going to do the show.
And we're obviously in the non-bona fide media section.
Yeah. I mean,
bona fide media's in black tie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we wouldn't get into Sail Sharks, but we might be interviewing. We might be interviewing World Player of the Year. No, we will be interviewing World Player of the Year in Monaco. So, you know, every cloud, I guess.
No, I know where you'd rather be, Jay.
Yes, well, truth be told, so do I. I don't know what I'm going to wear for this. I don't.
Everyone's really worried about this. Let's put out an appeal. What should JB wear? First world problem, this.
Yeah, exactly.
Should he wear tweed, black tie, or what you're wearing now?
Yeah, well, usually I broadcast with no shoes on, but people go mental about that. One last thing on that is, it'll be really cool if we manage to do it. We're just going to do the podcast without you, Phil, and then have people rotating in as they sit down. So we will see what World Rugby come up with, but they're good eggs over there. I'm sure they will look after us.
Absolutely.
Bona fide media.
Right, we're done.
Let the bona fide boys play.
Yep, let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.